It is time for your favorite show to come in. I want the night. I'm John Brown. I'm joined by Jason Lawhead. This is Browner and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. We're giving y'all the sports. We're giving y'all the entertainment. We're giving y'all the fun. We're giving y'all the topical conversations. We got a lot going on. Obviously, opening day is tomorrow. Obviously, the national championship game ended last night. Obviously, we're going to break one down, and obviously, we're going to get into the other. But the little curveball, before I get to it, let me introduce Jason. Jason Lawhead, professional comedian, a country traveler, back roads, cities, towns, municipalities, all of that to tell jokes. What up, Jason?
What up, man? Yeah, I'm jumping a flight tomorrow, heading out to Augusta for the Masters. Lucky enough to have been invited by Bill Burr and there's a crew of guys. He's got a nice house. So I'm actually, my dad's coming as well, which is amazing. This is like a bucket list of all bucket list stories. So I'm flying in to Cleveland tomorrow. Thursday, my dad and I are going to road trip, I'm going to drive his car. We're going to go to Statesville, North Carolina, spend the night. Then Friday, go into Augusta. You check into the house Bill rented. If all goes well and all goes to plan, you know, knock on wood, travel plan. Like, hey, we get there and then a crew of us are all joining up on that day, that evening. And then Saturday and Sunday, we'll be going to both rounds at the Masters. And then drive back Monday with my dad to Cleveland and fly back to San Diego Tuesday. So this will be my, you know, last day of the week. I'll miss three shows, but it's going to be well worth it. And I'm going to have a great story coming back. And hey, Tiger's playing.
That was and my next question.
Make the cut or not? I don't know. I don't know if I'll get to see him. But look, it's a short field. If Tiger could win it, sure he could win it because he knows the course. And if he chips and putts his butt off, then he'll have a chance. So it could be one of those stories for the ages that, dude, you were at that Masters. Like, yeah, I was at that Masters, the one Tiger. One again after another car wreck.
When you heard him announce today that he was definitely in, did you get a little more excited for the trip?
Well, of course. I mean, I actually was texting Bill and my dad last week when I had heard rumors late last week. He had played two straight days of practice rounds out there and he had never officially withdrew his name from the Masters. So he's always on his exemption. You know, even if he's laying in a hospital bed until he calls and says, I'm not playing, he's on that list unless he doesn't show up for his tee time and then he's disqualified. So I was like, oh boy, I got a feeling Tiger's going to go out there. If there's any course he knows he can maybe mobilize around, hit shots around, knows that it's the Masters, sure. But what, you know, the novice fan doesn't realize, it's not a very deep field. I mean, there's a lot of exemptions in this field, older guys, past winners. It's only a field of 91, so only about half of that makes the cut line. He's won it. It's a course where older guys after injuries have been able to go throw darts out there against the young guys. Fred Couples took it to a Sunday lead in his 50s. Jack Nicklaus had 58 after a hip replacement. The year after Tiger won his first one, Jack Nicklaus at 58 and had a hip replacement finished sixth at the Masters the year Marco Mara won it. He finished ahead of Tiger in 98 at age 58. So it's been done. Ben Hogan's come from a terrible car wreck to win the U.S. Open. And we're talking about one of the greatest athletes, at least competitive-wise, right? If you don't give him body type athletes, you're going to call him Bo Jackson or LeBron James. But when it comes to his sport and what's between his ears and the way he's had to bounce back or keep his body from bounce back, yeah, he's one of the greatest of all times.
I respect golfers. I want to say that before I say what I'm about to say, but I respect golfers 100%. It's a very difficult game to play. It's more of a self-challenge than it is anything. But I never call those guys athletes. They're not.
Yeah, using the term loosely in the sense. Yeah, because what for his sport, I'm talking about like
for his sport, right?
Yeah.
He's fine-tuned. He's a fine-tuned athlete in the comparison of, yes, what you're basically getting at. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, again, those guys work hard. Not saying that they don't. Not saying that they don't deserve the accolades that they have had praised upon them. But you put them on a football field or a baseball field or,
well, of course,
or a soccer field, like, it'll be ugly and it'll be probably be ridiculous. So
right.
But in
the same respect, because it is such a mentally fatigued game and you do have to walk, and a lot of these courses that they play aren't the kind of courses you and I play. These are undulating, hilly courses over 4 days in certain elements, and they get hungry and they have to get, you know, they have to play this full round and they have to play in this concentration level. So you could take a lot of those refined athletes that they aren't, right? And even if they were... Even if they were good competitive golfers, then they could hit balls and they can go out and make pars and you know, play like a Tony Romo, let's say. It's hard for 4 days. You put those guys in that situation, walking, keeping their concentration, playing the mental fatigue game.
You want to tell me that these guys are mentally tough? I'm not buying it, because you can't boo when they swing. If you can't boo somebody when they – now, the taking the picture funny. Portion of it, I get it. Because visual, blinding, swing, I get right. that portion of it.
Right.
But if you can't go boo before they That's swing, hilarious. Get out of here with the concentration part. Just stop it. If you That's can't funny. Boo in someone's backswing.
I'll appreciate that one. That's pretty funny. Yeah.
So, yeah, anybody who is successful at anything, I take my hat off to them, because success is very difficult to achieve at a high level for anyone in any walk of profession that you do.
It's kind of funny if you were to compare it, it'd be like when the field goal has to go out there to kick a 52 yarder to win it, and there was like marshals going, like, putting their hands down, like, quiet please right before the snap, you know, right. like the quiet the gallery down.
Or you're on the road, you're shooting a free throw down one.
Yeah, there's a bunch of PGA Tour guys with their hands right. up around the arena lower bowl.
Stop it. So, you know, I think we always melt things together when it comes from a sports aspect, because I think oftentimes people don't have a definition, or they don't want to insult these professionals by calling them something other than an athlete or calling a game something other than a sport. So, you know, I love.
Yeah, no, but going back to the whole Tiger thing, he is an athlete, and at his sport, one of the most refined ever. And I think he, you know, does he have a chance to win it? If you had to give me money to bet, I would go, no, he's not going to win it. And a good chance is, the odds are, he probably won't make the cut, but we'll see. If he shoots, you know, 72 each day, then he's probably going to make the cut.
So, speaking of cuts, last night, you can't cut it more close than that.
Mm.
I wanna say, before any of this, I liked Hubert Davis before this game. They collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Hubert Davis after this game.
Sure.
There were a lot of things that I saw from Hubert Davis during this tournament that, if he can recruit, which is because these kids are not his recruits. These are other, right. these are Roy Williams right. players, basically.
Right.
If
right.
he can recruit at the level that a Kentucky can, or now that a Memphis can, or a Duke can, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a full on problem, because the guy can coach.
Yeah, then the thing is, you know, he was still sitting shotgun when these classes were recruited with Roy Williams. So he has that rapport. He has that, you know, kind of familiarity and that kind of, like, kind of resume to say, hey, look, I was right there with Roy when we brought these teams in to bring, you know, and we're gonna be back in the finals again. You're gonna be on national TV. Look at the amount of exposure these guys got. And no, there's no doubt. And I was even tweeting last night, because I was so impressed throughout the whole tournament, you know, until the second half. The second half was the only time, and I wouldn't even say it was like so glaring that I wouldn't say it was like he was out coached. Give Bill Self credit, man. He Bill Self understood there wasn't a way to win the rebound battle, and he had to take the pace of the game away. And Bill Self and Kansas, they had their only hope was to go snatch that pace in the first 4 minutes of that second half, and they did it, and they changed the game. And it was the first time, I think, throughout the whole tournament, Hubert Davis didn't have the upper hand in a coaching maneuver. I mean, if you look at throughout the tournament, and even in the first half, when you would teams that would come out of TV timeouts, Hubert Davis was the better coach. He was better than Krzyzewski coming out of TV timeouts. His team responded in those 4-minute stretches all the time. And then even in the, like, you know, so, but that was the one shining moment for Bill Self. He really, because Bill Self was, I think, on kind of the chopping block. If they get run out of the building by 30, Bill Self, there's a big come to, how do you get beat by 30 with a number one seed after beating Villanova the way you did? And so that was big for Bill Self. Galvanizing moment for his career to be like, I'm one of the greats. Everybody shut up. I got two titles. I came back from 9 down with 2 minutes left against Memphis and 16 down to Carolina. So everybody just shut up. I'm a legend.
What I heard today really got my attention about what we saw in the tournament, and I think it plays into what you just said about Bill Self. There are no more great teams. They are just great individuals. Because of the way college basketball is a one-and-done, two-and-done level of sport at this point, there are no great teams. You won't see Phi Slamma Jamma again. You won't see a team with Michael Jordan and James Worthy on it again. You won't see a guy like
Georgetown in the 80s.
Right. You won't see that. You won't see Patrick Ewing and Alonzo Mourning on the same team again.
The kind of Duke team Krzyzewski really used to have.
Right. You're not going to get those anymore. So
Lute Olson, Arizona team.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You're not going to get those. So when the game was over and Kansas had won and they made this great comeback, I wasn't shocked at the comeback. Because I thought Bill Self's game plan to start the game was foolish, and Charles Barkley said as much at halftime. You're not going to beat these guys inside. Your advantage is the guard play. And the fact that when North Carolina came out in the second half and they just went away from their game plan in the first half in the first 3 minutes and allowed Kansas to squeeze back into the game when they stopped going inside to the big fella, I really thought that that was the real turning point in the game. Because I didn't think it was the turnovers, because Kansas made turnovers at a halftime too. They just made shots that they were missing before halftime.
Yeah.
For them to have
Kansas
only,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
For them to only have made 6 shots in the first half, but then in the first 4 minutes have already made 6 shots, I thought that was a great indication that they had found something and they were going to go after that. But I left this game thinking on more of a bigger scale of, in place of national championship teams. This team, like, what are they? Like, where do they place? This may be one of the more forgettable. Like, they will never forget it. Kansas will never forget it. Bill Self will never forget it. In a week, no one can tell you who won a national championship. Because they didn't have a story. There wasn't a player on that team that everybody wanted to watch. There wasn't some...
I'll tell you what. Talking about that, what a Rob job that McCormick didn't get the outstanding player of the tournament. I mean, that was just a favoritism call. I mean, this kid, come on. He has 25 in the semifinal game. He's the only reason you don't get run out of the building, and he's right. The biggest reason you get back in this game. And, you know, Agabji just kind of joined the fray and started playing well when Kansas started playing well. And, you know, you look at the numbers. McCormick was 7 of 15 from the field. He had 10 rebounds, 15 points against Agabji, who was 4-9. From the field, 1-4 from 3, only 3 rebounds. McCormick had as many offensive rebounds as he had rebounds. He had 12 points. And like I said, look, at the end of the day, Bacot played the best first half of the game.
Yes.
Remy Martin played the best second half of the game.
Yes,
but McCormick played the best overall basketball game from tip to buzzer. There was not a better player on the floor. And he's the reason why Kansas wasn't down 20 plus at half.
I really felt like when this game went to halftime, I said if North Carolina comes out and they can sustain what they had at the end of the half for 2 minutes, Kansas would tap out.
Yeah.
Because it looked inevitable. The way that North Carolina was defending and making consistent shots, not making every shot, not making tough shots, just winning the offensive rebound battle and making the loose ball play. This game is going to be a runaway.
I said here in my own head when Hubert Davis called that last time, right before the half, he had that use it or lose it timeout.
Yeah.
He had to take. He takes the timeout. They turn the ball over. Kansas go down and hits a bucket to make it 38-25. And in an instant, I said, oh, man, that's big for Kansas. If they, you know, get a stop going into the half down 13, that could be so much worse. And then Carolina ran that. They ran it right past them on the next possession, ran it right past them and scored right seconds before the half to make it 40-25. I instantly went the other side. I went, oh, this game's over. I instantly thought, oh, you know what? Carolina just going to beat them to death. Because I thought, wow, they couldn't even get that last stop. And, you know, that was just an indicator. But, boy, they did. They came out. And like you just said, and we talked, they controlled the pace immediately. And that was their only hope, was that first 4 minutes, that TV time. That was their only hope.
You know, I wouldn't even say that was their. I really felt like this game took a turn when Leaky Black got that fourth foul. Mm-hmm. 'Cause when they brought in Puff Johnson, yeah, the guy who threw up on the court because he was out of shape and a couple of other things, they really got a boost from Johnson that they didn't expect, and that kind of put them in a position to go, okay, well, he's hot right now. Babcock's hurt. Caleb Love is now limping left and right. Do we go to him, or do we keep going into Babcock? And they seemed very stagnant at that point, and I thought that shot in the arm that Puff gave them really also deflated them, because at that point they didn't know who was going to take the shots. The last play of the game. Let's look at this play.
That was hard to watch.
If you're watching this game, Manic had been their best shooter, mm-hmm, and this play was drawn up for him. And when you're as tired as these kids were, because as you saw, Puff threw up. You saw Babcock turn an ankle. He turned two ankles in this game, and that last ankle turn proved to be too much. When you gave so much in the semifinal game to get into this game and have this game go down to the wire, they just didn't have it, and the kid fell. Look at this. As they inbound the ball, his legs just gave out. This wasn't some vicious screen he ran into. As he's going down a down screen, he just trips. If you're listening on the radio, we've got it on the screen. So head over to YouTube and check the show out. Mm. And then you watch a terrible shot from Caleb Love that he had been casting up all game, and he never really got the rhythm that he had in the previous games, especially like the one he had in the Duke game. And the writing was just on the wall, man. It really was.
But, you know, I was really surprised because he had a bad first half, and he was 1-for-6, 0-2 from three. So you felt like, man, they're doing this without him. And I think maybe, you know, Kansas did a great job of forcing the ball towards him, especially obviously when guys went down. Then Carolina was going to look for Love, or, you know, maybe they thought, hey, if we can get him cooking a little bit in the second half, this will be a runaway. And then maybe it backfired a little bit because they started going to him a lot more. But there were circumstances, and right, Kansas had a lot to do with that. And so did the injuries. And as the game developed down into the stretch, and once Kansas caught him and took that lead, then the game plan had shifted. And they, you know, what's got to kill Carolina is they're sitting here going, man, we beat him to death on the free throw line. We beat him to death on the boards. You know, it wasn't, we turned the ball over a few more times and shot poorly, obviously, in the second half compared to them. But boy, you know, you win those kind of statistics big time, and you sit there and you go, we got three guys had double doubles.
Yeah.
I mean, Carolina had three guys that had double doubles. You know, you sit there and you look at that kind of a thing in the scorebook and you go, how did we out rebounded them by 20? We had 24 offensive rebounds. They had 8. We went to the line 24 times. They went, 12 or something to that effect. We outscored them by 10 at the line. How do we lose this game up 15 and a half? I mean, if anything that we ever remember about this that they'll ever talk about is obviously the largest comeback. That will be the one thing that kind of stands out. I think you're right about Kansas not being, you know, a memorable team that won a championship that will remember, or this being such a memorable final. People will remember the Duke Carolina game,
yes,
way more, yes, than they'll remember the final game.
Yes, and that was always the trap door of this tournament. The further Coach mm-hmm. K advanced and the further North Carolina advanced, it became far more about the historic rivalry between those two programs than it did about what was happening on the other side of the bracket. Yeah. Because again, Villanova had a great year, but they had injuries, and Kansas was a number one seed that managed to make it to the championship that had zero fanfare and zero conversation about them. they were really more of an afterthought because another game had to be played just because of the way that the tournament bracket shook out.
I mean, didn't Kentucky early on just run Kansas?
Great game. Man, at the end of the day, it was a great game.
McCormick should have been MVP.
And sometimes,
Carolina and Hubert will be back.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so, because obviously Bill Self's history and his ability at Kansas to get these average teams to number one seed through the Big 12 and into the NCAA championship. These guys got to get credit for that. So we've got so much more to come on the second half of this show. It's baseball season tomorrow. Jason's not going to be here, so we're going to give you some breakdowns. We're going to give you some build-ups. And we're going to give you some fun about baseball coming up, not only here, but all across baseball. Who's your top 10? We'll find out when we come back, Brown and Lawhead. And now we are back with the second half of the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening and joining in. Browner and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090 ESPN, podcasting style, giving it to you at the iTunes podcast store under Kaplan and Crew, that name right behind me. That's why I keep it up or change my mind. And also do the same thing on YouTube if you miss anything on this show today, or if you missed anything in the past and you want to kind of catch up on what we've been talking about. We spent the first half talking about how great it's going to be for Jason to head over to the Masters, because you know white people love going to an event called the Masters. In addition to that, they're going to
it's the golfers.
This is what happens to take place in the South at a place where they didn't let black people play for a long time. But the Masters, no less. Have fun hitting those little white balls into the hole. I think baseball is upon us. We survived the lockout. We survived petty squabbling. We survived a spring training. Jason, how many spring training innings did you watch? Not games.
None. None.
I watched six of them in person in Peoria between two teams. I had no idea I was going to see, because I got there and then the team I wanted to see wasn't there. So shout out to the Angels and a bunch of kids I never heard of make errors in the field. And I think they were playing the Mariners. Maybe I'm not sure. But nonetheless, Major League Baseball announced its top 10 players. Major League Baseball, by that mean, I mean MLB Network, you know, the thing that the commissioner can get you fired from if he doesn't like what you say on the actual air. This list is interesting. So we're going to go from top to bottom and the way that they listed them. First off, Ohtani, which you know how I feel about that guy.
Ooh, that's number one.
We're gonna get to the list.
That's their number one, or is there? What are you working from again? I forgot what you said.
MLB.com.
MLB.com. Right. Are you working top to bottom?
I'm working from one to ten.
So Ohtani is their number one player.
Ohtani's number one.
I love that.
Mike Trout is number two. Tatis is number three.
Wow.
Juan Soto's number four. Bryce Harper is number five. Mookie Betts is number six. Jacob DeGrom is number seven. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is number eight. Freddie Freeman of the Los Angeles
Dodgers
is number nine. And Ronald Acuna Jr. is number 10.
Now, who do you take? If you got one pick right there, who are you taking out of that list?
Mookie Betts.
Are you?
Mookie Betts.
Not a bad bet.
And I can explain to you why. He's won a championship in both leagues. He's been MVP in both leagues. He's a game changer. He's a Golden Glove player. Most importantly, with the exception of this year, he's been healthy his entire career. He's a leader. He's not a brat.
Base dealer, base runner, gets things moving in motion. He hits for power when you need him to. Drive in the big run, scores the big run. Takes away the big run.
Right.
No, he is. I mean, I love that pick. I mean, and as much as I love Ohtani being a two-way player, I probably would, you know, that's, you know, I love Mookie Betts. I've harped on that many times. I like Juan Soto too.
Can I just give everyone can we pump the brakes at the prisoner of the moment that we are because of Ohtani? Okay.
I want more to prove, but I think he's a real deal.
Is it me, or winning doesn't mean anything anymore? And I get that it's harder to win in baseball. I 100% understand that. I'm not making this grand proclamation that he and he alone can elevate the Angels. The Angels have Anthony Rendon, one of the highest paid third basemen in baseball, World Series champion off the Nats. They have Mike Trout, who was hurt most of last year. I think he played 25, 26 games last year. And they have Ohtani, a guy who led the league in home runs and apparently is the best pitcher and best hitter, according to MLB.com. If they don't win this year, what's it worth? Because if you're going to tell me, and this works for any sport, if you're great, I need to see wins on the field, I need to see astronomical numbers. And I mean astronomical. Like, oh, we didn't win. Wasn't because of me. Because Mike Trout's won MVP too, and team didn't sniff the playoffs. Because he, when healthy, is a great player. But him and Ohtani,
he won two or three. He's won two.
I know he's got at least one.
No, he's got two at least. He might have three.
Trout. So there we go. So let's just give him two for the sake of the conversation. Mike Trout's got two MVPs. So now you get a two-time MVP, and what a lot of people are saying is the greatest baseball player since Babe Ruth. So now, according to this list, you got the two best players in the league on the same team and one of the best third basemen. So what are we doing at this point? How much longer will the novelty last? How much longer?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's, you know, it's a novelty for the Angels to have him if they're not going to win, right? I don't think he's a novelty, though. I think this guy is obviously, you know, you put this guy in a type of scenario with the Dodgers or the Yankees or something, and he makes them so much more interestingly dangerous and deep and all the things he can do. I'd like to see maybe if the Angels have learned anything from Ohtani last year by saying, okay, we know kind of what he's capable of off the mound and the days surrounding it in the batting order and when he hits, when he pitches. And maybe we just get out there and commit to every five starts and put him at a five inning or whatever pitch limit and know that we can get this many at bats out of him through the month as well. And, you know, merge the two more in a more consistent manner than they did last year. Kind of just, you know, he was a lot of times it was six, seven, 8 days between a start. It would kind of vary. So they get him on a schedule and they can get some play around him and Trout stays in the lineup all year. You know, they could be a team that can, you know, but yeah, as a team, prove it. But I think he's a commodity, no doubt, and I think he deserves to be right at the top of that list.
If I'm the Angels, and believe me, I don't want to be. If I'm the Angels, I'm going to play this kid every day. If I'm the Angels, the pitching portion of this is done. Because you're far more valuable to me as an asset as a everyday DH. You have very little value to me as a pitcher. Because you're, like you said, one every seven starts. Where's that getting me? I need that bat in the lineup every day. Now that Rendon's going to be healthy, now that Trout's going to be healthy, you can build around those three guys to show me some success. 2, 3, and 4. We should be able to make a run at the division with these three dudes in the lineup 150 games out of the year.
Do you use him as a bullpen arm, knowing that he can bat every day and you can just do a double switch and not take him out of the game and out of his and just move him to the pitcher's mound? If you ever, hey, look, you've already played 6 or 7 innings. You're warmed up. You've thrown the ball a few times from the outfield or wherever you've played. Go in there, get your 8 warm-up tosses and get this guy out. We need you to get this guy out and then maybe the next inning and go to the closer or something when you know you have the lead. I mean, there's options. You have so many options with this guy.
If you can,
if Trout stays in the lineup with him all year long, I think that they can definitely improve. I look for the Angels to improve. They have nowhere to go but up.
If Ohtani's people came to me and said he absolutely wants to pitch, I would say, okay, once every 10 days, once every 15 days. And those 15 days, I need you to play baseball before the day, and I need you to play the next day. I can't have, quote unquote, the best player in baseball taking the day before off and the day after off because he wants to pitch, which then again, your bat's not in the lineup.
I think he's willing to play. I think obviously he's shown he's willing to get out there and play.
I need to see it.
This is a big year. This is a big proving year for how the Angels handle it and how he handles it.
This is a massive year. He's thrown more innings at this level than he's ever threw last year. And he had more at bats at this level than he had in the previous years. So it's for me, he and Tatis are in the same boat. And Tatis's boat is already taking water. I love Fernando Tatis Jr. He's one of my favorite players to watch. But, buddy, you got to be able to play. Before you are anything, you have got to be able to play. Same thing for Trout. The top three guys on this list have far more questions than they have answers. For me, Trout has more. It's proven more. Trout has less road ahead of him to prove than the other two. But Trout just missed damn near a whole season last year.
Yeah, no, Trout, I think he's got a lot to prove. I think he's got a big comeback to prove. I mean, this is a long, 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 very rich contract. There's not many years he's got a ways to become like the end of that, and we forgive you for being bad at the end.
Right. But Albert Pujols bad.
Yeah, exactly. Like you've brought us some hardware. You've set some records. You can be bad at the back end of this terrible deal we gave you, but he can't be like he can't go even like how Josh Hamilton went sober even for a few years, like because that'll get old if you're just like, really, this is all you really were right after the injury, because
this is what we waited for.
Yeah, this is a long so he's got a lot to prove. He's got a lot to prove to be Mike Trout again. That definitely.
Let me see. I like Juan Soto at four. I mean, you could have had him. Juan Soto at two or one, and I wouldn't have. You know, I think he's amazing. I love Bryce Harper. I think Mookie Betts is the best player on this list.
I like him too.
This Jacob DeGrom discussion. A pitcher can't be the best player in baseball. They just can't. You don't play enough. A pitcher can't be MVP to me. That's why they created the Cy Young. I don't see the value in a once every fifth day guy as opposed to a guy who plays every single day. I just don't see why this is even a point of contention between people that think that a pitcher can be the best player in baseball. I he doesn't play defense. He doesn't play every day. He doesn't hit every day. So I like Jacob DeGrom, but I believe pitchers should be in their own category when it comes to best players. Best everyday player and then best pitcher. Now, if you want to tell me who the best pitcher is, I'm going to tell you it's Jacob DeGrom. I don't think that's a discussion. I mean, Steven Strasburg, if he's healthy, but he's about as healthy as Anthony Davis.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, unless you're it's like a Mariano Rivera at the back end of the bullpen, right? I mean, I'm with you as far as the best player. I think it's a guy that's going to be in the lineup every day, that's going to be in the middle or top of that order, that's going to be a guy everybody follows through. Mm-hmm. And DeGrom is great, right? Like, yes. But you need a DeGrom and two Scherzers to seal up a deal if you don't have a Juan Soto or a Mookie Betts or a Freddie Freeman.
You need these things for his value to be maximized.
Right.
So if you don't have your everyday guys, the Groms of the world they lose a lot of value because at this point
you need two and a half of them.
Yes.
To make up for not what you have that we're talking about. So,
and you can't do that. You can't clone people. Not yet, at least.
No, not yet, at least.
Not yet. Major League Baseball ain't past that yet. So there's into these divisions. Let's go over some of these divisions. Because if we're looking at, we'll start here with the NL West in case we run out of time. I have no qualms with the people of San Francisco. I love San Francisco. I think it's a beautiful city. I love to visit it. I go at least two times a year. I don't think they're going to do that again.
No, me neither.
I thought last year was great. I thought it was a sign of resilience. They became the little engine that could. And they did. They won the division. They got bounced in the first round. But nevertheless, they carried the water to the end of the line. I don't see that happening. The Rockies just paid Chris Bryant a lot of money. They pay people every other year. The Rockies pay somebody and then they trade them a year later. So I don't know what the hell the Rockies are doing. I think they're going to be in last place. I think the Arizona Diamondbacks are going to be in last place, if there is one. Because I don't really see anything of fortune other than Madison Bumgarner, who at this point, he just collected checks from them. And then we're down to the Dodgers and the Padres, which I think the Dodgers obviously have a winning culture. They obviously have endless amounts of money to spend. They have great scouting. They have a great ownership group. They have great players. But the one weak spot that normally isn't a weak spot for them is pitching. You don't know what's going to happen with Trevor Bauer. Clayton Kershaw is not Clayton Kershaw of a couple years ago.
Mm-mm.
And the one of their players I like the most is out for the year with Tommy John, the kid with the long red hair. So they got Urias. Not Urias. They have
Urea.
Yes, the guy who wears the glasses.
He's tough.
So
Rick Hill.
Yes. So they've got a couple of guys.
Sure.
But when I'm looking at that starting rotation, I like it when I look up and I see who we have in San Diego. I like our starters for the Padres. I like that they put Nick Martinez in there as an innings eater. They traded for Sean Manaea, if that's how you even pronounce it. I can't get it. Sorry, sue me. As another innings eater. They have the kid who threw the no-hitter last year. They have guys. They are ready. I think this is the year where the pitching carries them further than we've ever thought that the pitching could carry them with Tatis being out, and we don't know what we're going to get from first base. We don't know what we're going to get from right field. We don't know what we're going to get from left field. I think this is the year, and I think these moves were made with the thought in mind that for the first two months of the season, roughly, the pitching is going to have to carry them.
Yeah, I mean, the first three names that you brought up in that division, you said, you know, San Francisco, I don't think they're going to do what they did again. No, I agree. I think that they'll still have, some say. I think they'll still have the type of team that is playing towards the end of the season for something. Rockies, Diamondbacks. But the important thing is, though, and this is San Diego's season to lose, or at least a playoff spot to lose, okay? Because they, even if the Dodgers win the division, San Diego can still make the postseason.
Yes.
So this is where, but this is going to be the difference, because this is where it was last year, and it's those three teams you just mentioned. Can the Padres go well over 500 against them? Because the Dodgers will. The Dodgers will mm-hmm. beat the brakes off of those three teams over the season series. They'll beat the brakes off of them. No matter if they got two pitchers only, or no matter if this guy's – guess what? The Dodgers are going to go take care of that business. Can San Diego? Because if San Diego can beat those three teams at a 550, 575 clip, then they're going to be in good shape come September.
I agree with you.
I think that's where the season falls.
Historically, they've been able to do that. And if I'm honest with myself, as I look around the National League, I got to tell you, the bottom feeders in the Central and the bottom feeders in the East, the Padres should, with this rotation healthy, should get 100 wins. Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, Joe Musgrove, and the two guys they just added, in addition to, we don't know what we're going to get from Chris Paddock. We don't know what we're going to get from Mike Clevinger. We don't know if we're going to see Mackenzie Gore. That's three more guys added on. So now that's eight potential rotation starters. And that's if Weathers doesn't figure it out. People know I'm a huge Weathers fan, even though he was terrible last year. So you have eight potential nine starting pitchers in your organization. I think that's going to be the key against the Diamondbacks, teams like the Diamondbacks. I think that's going to be key against the teams like Colorado. Because last year, we were running out guys that they're not even on the roster anymore. Hell, they might not be on anybody's roster.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's where I feel like that's where, like, the big, at the end of the day, when you come down to the last week of September, the big chunk of that graph pie is going to say, where did they how did they play those three teams? Because that's who they're going to play the most. And you can talk about how bad the Central is and some bottom feeders in the East. Problem is, Padres aren't going to play them very often. They go there once. Those guys come here once. So they've got to, I mean, they've got to lay into Arizona, Colorado, and San Francisco all year long if they're going to have a chase for, you know, 95 to 100 wins, which by judging by last year where what San Francisco did, you know, San Diego's going to have to win 95 games to be in to, you know, push San Francisco out of that chase.
I got the Yankees winning the AL East. I got the White Sox winning the AL Central. I got the Astros winning the AL West. Obviously, I already said I got the Padres winning the NL West. I have Atlanta winning the NL East, and I got the Brewers winning the NL Central. That's how things are going to shake out.
I got Blue Jays in the East. Ooh. I got White Sox in the Central. I got Astros in the West. I got Atlanta in the East, Milwaukee in the Central. I'm going to take the Padres. I'm going to be a homer because my Guardians stink so bad. I spent more money at the gas pump last week than Larry Dolan did on free agency this year. They stink so bad. I'm not even going to be paying attention to the Cleveland Guardians much this year. So I'm homering hard this year. I'm a Padre guy. Go San Diego.
Jason is going to be traveling. He won't be with us tomorrow. I think John Gennaro is going to join us. Jason, you have safe travels. You bring back some stories. You bring back some good times. And hopefully you bring back a Tiger Woods victory at the Masters. Till tomorrow for me, till next week for Jason, Brown and Lawhead. Peace.
Peace.